All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a mock draft Monday mailbag where I will be looking at a recent mock draft from thedraftnetwork.com as well as answering your listener question.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com. RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans. And of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your next order. So today's Mock Draft Monday mailbag episode is one in which I will be looking at a mock draft from Dre Harris of the Draft Network and sort of breaking down my thoughts on that. We'll be looking at Justin Fields as a possible pick for the Falcons at number 4. And then we'll get into a conversation that's not necessarily related to what Dre Harris had the Falcons selecting, but what a team before the Falcons had selecting, with the Dolphins taking Devontae Smith. And that's going to lead us to a conversation about fast wide receivers and 40 times and speed scores and all that various thing, which I find interesting. And later on in the episode, we're going to get into your listener questions. We'll talk about sort of how much Dante Fowler is worth and whether a pay cut is in store for him. We'll talk about the recent Trey Lance / Zach Wilson hype and my thoughts on that. And we'll talk about the sort of differences when it comes to salary cap and dead money, when it comes to cutting or trading a player. So without further ado, let's get into Dre Harris's recent mock draft from the Draft Network posted last weekend. And of course, he had Trevor Lawrence going number 1 to the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Jets taking Zach Wilson with the number 2 pick, Miami taking Devontae Smith with the number 3 pick, and the Falcons taking Justin Fields with that number 4 pick, the quarterback out of Ohio State. And I don't have any particularly compelling opinion about Justin Fields on today's episode any more so than I had 2 weeks ago when we did our first Mock Draft Monday. And, you know, I said then that if Justin Fields is on the board at 4, I think the Falcons will take him. You know, for those folks that missed that episode, I recommend go back and listening to it. But, you know, it wasn't because I thought that there was some overwhelming evidence suggesting that. It's all mostly circumstantial. I think it's related to the fact that he's a hometown kid, his obvious physical gifts, the fact that he went to Ohio State, and we have teams like the Saints, Ravens, and Washington that have had a lot of recent connections to that school. And that's important because Terry Fontenot, Dwayne Jones, and Kyle Smith, basically the three people at the top of the Falcons, at least draft hierarchy, come from those organizations. And so there's that obvious connection. And the fact that those three organizations, the Saints, Ravens, and Washington, tended to lean towards, you know, power five players, big schools, prospects, and that gives Justin Fields a potential leg up. Now, whether Fields is going to be there at pick 4, I have no idea. Keep hearing about the Carolina Panthers being very aggressive trying to acquire a quarterback this offseason. And if they can't convince Houston to give up Deshaun Watson, I don't know where their quarterback is going to come from. And it does seem like going up and moving up into the top 3 picks of this draft, particularly trading with Miami at that number 3 spot, seems to be the next best option. And that could include taking a player like Justin Fields at that spot, leapfrogging the Falcons. So I feel like there's a very distinct possibility that we will see quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3 in this draft, which I think also pushes the narrative or possibility that the Falcons, if they do like one of those top 3 quarterbacks over the 4th guy in Trey Lance, you know, one option that is available to them is moving up for a quarterback in this draft. And I know that's not something that a lot of people are particularly thrilled to hear, but, you know, I wouldn't dismiss it outright at this point in time. So we'll see how that plays out. But again, going back to that 4th quarterback and Trey Lance, I am not as convinced as I am when it comes to if Trey Lance is sitting there at 4, and it seems like most people believe that Trey Lance will be the 4th quarterback taken in this draft. We'll see how that turns out. But if he's sitting there at 4, if the quarterbacks do go 1, 2, and 3 and it's Trey Lance left, I'm not as convinced that the Falcons will pull the trigger on Trey Lance at four. Like, if I was putting a number on it, I would say, look, you know, if Fields is there, I'm like 85% confident that he'll be the pick at four if he's there. If Lance is there, it's much closer to 50-50. Still a distinct possibility, but, you know, I think we're going to have to get a lot further in this cycle before I would say it's a likelihood. Now, what I also found interesting about Dre's mock draft was that he had Devontae Smith going third overall in this draft to Miami. And I still have a hard time seeing Devontae Smith getting picked that high, just because I think NFL teams are going to penalize him for the fact of how skinny he is, which is why when I've done my various mock drafts this cycle, I have not mocked him in the top 10. I think he's probably going to, quote unquote, fall to the 10 to 15 range and be selected where guys like Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb were selected last year in that same range. I expect guys like Ja'Marr Chase and Jaylen Waddle to go ahead of Devontae Smith. And, you know, I don't see much of a possibility that we'll see three wide receivers go in the top 10. So I feel like Smith is the guy that's most likely to fall out of the top 10. You know, I think Smith's stock will be somewhat tied to his 40 time. You know, NFL teams generally don't like small wide receivers unless they're really, really fast. And based off of Smith's weight at 174 pounds that he's apparently at, we'll find out, you know, in the coming days and weeks if that's accurate, but a fast 40 time for him would be somewhere in that 4.35 to 4.4 range, when you base it off of the various formulas for weight adjusted 40 times. And technically that's not even fast. It's more closer to average at that weight. A quote unquote fast 40 for Smith at that weight would be something sub 4.3 at 174 pounds. You use Football Outsiders speed score metric, and to have a comparable speed to what Alchik Robinson ran when he was 184 pounds at his combine, ran a 4.35, or Miko Hardman was 187 pounds and ran a 4.33, Smith would have to run a 4.25 at 174 to have a comparable speed score to those two guys, who obviously are very fast guys. You compare that to Jaylen Waddle, who's at 183. If he runs a 4.25, like a lot of people think he can and will, his speed score will be very similar to what Henry Ruggs's was last year. Speed score tends to favor, by the way, big fast guys. You know, for example, Julio Jones' speed score is one of the best ever at 220 pounds. He should have ran a 40. His expected 40 time would have been somewhere in the 4.6s, but of course he ran a 4.34. Calvin Johnson's speed score is like one of the best ever, at least for a wide receiver, maybe for anybody. He had 239 pounds. He's supposed to run like a 4.75 40. He ran a 4.35. So his speed score is like on the level of like Usain Bolt's speed score. You know, trying to calculate Usain Bolt's speed score at the end of his Olympic career, you know, it was very comparable to what Calvin Johnson's was. Now, when trying to calculate what Usain Bolt's speed score would have been at the prime of his career when he, you know, in 2009, when he set the world record in 100 meters, you know, I think that's like the equivalent, if my rudimentary math is correct, it's like running a 4.15, a 4.16 40 yard dash. But when you look at that speed score, that's comparable to what Vernon Davis's speed score was when he was 254 pounds and ran a 4.38. And by the way, if you're curious about Kyle Pitts, the guy we've comped to Vernon Davis previously, you know, he's listed at 240 pounds. To have a comparable speed score as Vernon Davis, he would have to run a 4.31. I don't think he's going to run that fast, but, you know, to be considered one of the fastest tight ends ever, if he ran something like in the 4.45 range, he would be comparable to guys like OJ Howard and Evan Engram and Greg Olsen, who aren't on Vernon Davis's level, but are a notch or two below. 4.55 for Pitts would be about Travis Kelce level of speed. You know, with the Exos combine time slowly sort of trickling out, Rashad Bateman publicly announced that at 210 pounds, he ran a 4.39 40. That would give him a similar speed score as Henry Ruggs. And even if you don't think those numbers are accurate, they're maybe a little bit inflated or whatever, let's subtract, you know, 5/100ths of a second and say, you know, Bateman's more of a 4.45 guy, 4.44 guy, I'm sorry. You know, that would give him a speed score comparable to Will Fuller at that size. So, by the way, you know, Marvin Hall's speed score was better than Ruggs's, better than Tyreek Hill's, better than Will Fuller's. But, you know, I'm not butthurt about it. The Falcons basically got rid of their second fastest pound for pound speedster of at least the last 5 years, but beyond Julio Jones. And, you know, it's that lack of speed is partially to blame why I'm not as high on guys like Zacchaeus and Chris Rowland and Russell Gage's ability to be anything more than slot receivers. Because when you look at their weight adjusted speed scores, they're kind of average speed for the guys of their size. You know, if they were running, instead of running in the 4.4s, if they were running in the 4.3s, that would indicate that they have, you know, really standout speed at their various weights. So just interesting things I thought about with sort of relating Devontae Smith being a top three pick or a top, you know, 15 pick and talking a little bit more about speed. So we will move on and get into the mailbag portion of today's episode and get into a conversation about, you know, what Dante Fowler's worth is and whether or not the Falcons will be proactive with asking him to take a legit pay cut rather than just simply restructuring his contract. And we'll get into that coming up on today's podcast. But before we get there, guys, I want to let you know that Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The NFL might be over, but NBA, college basketball, NHL, NASCAR, and FCS college football are all in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Just head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. So I got you covered on everything you need to know about the Falcons, but what about the rest of sports? Host Peter Bukowski has you covered now with the Locked On Today podcast. It's all the sports news that you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So our question comes from Barack. Shout out, Mr. President. He asks, do you think that he has several questions? Do you think that Matt Ryan should be traded soon? Can you do a mock next episode? Should Julio Jones stay? I think Dante Fowler is not worth $16 million in the Falcons situation right now. What do you think? So should Matt Ryan be traded soon? No. If you mean by soon in the calendar year of 2021. Now in 2022, we'll see. Should Julio Jones stay? Again, are you asking this year? The answer is yes. If we're asking next year, we'll see. Is Dante Fowler worth $16 million? I'd say no. His cap hit this year is closer to $19 million, and after restructuring, it would be around $12.5 million. I'm not sure he's even worth $12.5 million. That would make him about the 19th highest paid edge in the NFL in 2021. In terms of his actual worth, I feel like, you know, $9 or $10 million based off of what other edges are paid is kind of what Fowler is worth this year. So I'll be curious to see if the Falcons ask him to take a bigger pay cut than a max restructure. That's something that Joe Curry of CBS Sports talked about when he did the Bird Noises podcast with Matt Tabeek last week. Basically, Corey's reasoning was that the Falcons hold the leverage over Fowler and can pay him less than sort of $12.5 million because his market would be severely deflated given not only the depressed salary cap this offseason as well as his underwhelming 2020 season. I can only speculate, of course, but Fowler is basically guaranteed $6 million this year already this year. So if he's on the roster on March 22nd, the way his contract is structured, the rest of his $13 million base salary, or in this case, an additional $7 million in addition to the $6 million that he's already guaranteed, becomes fully guaranteed. So I think the Falcons, if they decided to tell him, you know, to go to him and say, look, we're only going to pay you $6 million and no more, would Dante Fowler say no to that? Obviously, I don't know the answer to that, but it does make sense for him to sort of accept that type of pay cut and try instead of hitting the open market in sort of a situation where either take the pay cut or we cut you. I think it makes more sense for Dante Fowler to stay in Atlanta in 2021, knowing that there's a very strong probability that barring him having like a 15 sack season, he's probably going to get cut next offseason. If and when the cap rebounds, he'll better have a just as good a chance, if not a better chance, to recoup any sort of lost revenue and get another substantial contract if he has that bounce back year this year in Atlanta than necessarily trying to navigate the uncertainties of this particular offseason and trying to have that rebound year somewhere else in 2021. So as for doing a mock draft, Barack, I'm not planning on doing any mocks, at least on the podcast, until after free agency. So probably in mid to late March. Longtime listeners know that I tend to be a firm believer that mocks are pretty useless until teams start filling needs in free agency. So really, until then, I'll just continue to look at other people's mocks and explore all the endless possibilities and sort of talk about the things that are interesting to me, like speed scores, like I did on today's episode. So AJ McCrary has two questions. The first one are, what are your thoughts on the Zach Wilson and Trey Lance hype? You know, I was personally slow to get on board the Zach Wilson train throughout the season. When I talked about him, you know, in October, November, I'd only seen a couple of games of that point, and I sort of saw him as a late first, early second round talent. And then I watched a couple of games of his down the stretch, and I came away understanding why people are billing him as a top five pick. You know, I think Wilson, the reason why he's getting hyped is because he's coming off a very productive year. The fact that you look at the last three number one picks have been guys that didn't go into that season, their final seasons, being considered to be elite prospects, considered to be candidates for that number one pick, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield. And they all went into their season sort of being considered like mid-round picks, had a really strong season, and were able to catapult themselves into that number one slot. And I think that's a similar dynamic that Wilson is having, and only for the fact that, you know, we would have four quarterbacks in a row if not for the presence of Trevor Lawrence in that regard. And in fact, you know, Lawrence is about to basically become the first quarterback since, I think, Jameis Winston to basically go into his final year being the prohibitive favorite to be QB1 and actually wind up being QB1 unless the Jaguars throw us a curveball, which I don't expect at this point in time. You go back to 2016, you know, Winston was that 2015 draft. 2016, people forget that the top quarterbacks going into that season were Christian Hackenberg, Cardale Jones, and Connor Cook, if you looked at the preseason mocks. Jared Goff and Carson Wentz and Paxton Lynch, all who went in the first round in that 2016 draft, sort of essentially came out of nowhere. I think Goff was probably like QB4 at that point going into the season. Then the following year, Deshaun Watson was the prohibitive favorite. And, you know, Brad Kaya from Miami was actually QB2 on a lot of people's boards going into that 2017 year. And obviously we saw Trubisky wind up being QB1, Mahomes be QB2 that year. And so, you know, talking about Trey Lance, however, to answer your question, AJ, you know, I felt like Trey Lance was kind of the forgotten man during the fall, and nobody was really talking about him on par with guys like Fields and Wilson. But as you guys recall, or if you didn't listen to that episode, but we had Mark Schofield on the podcast in mid to late October. And he basically, you know, essentially said in that episode that he thought, based off of their 2019 tape, that Trey Lance was better than Justin Fields, was a better prospect than Justin Fields was. And so I feel like a lot of the recent hype that Trey Lance seems to be getting is that for the people that didn't, because he didn't play this fall, he played one game this fall in a showcase game. But, you know, I think a lot of people didn't really get to see him this fall and didn't really watch him, his 2019 film, over the summer. And so now they're discovering Trey Lance in earnest. And now they're like, oh, this guy's really good. He should be considered just on the same level as the Zach Wilsons and the Justin Fields's of this draft class, and not necessarily being considered a significant notch below like it was the case at the end of the season when you looked at most December mocks and Trey Lance was barely being projected to be a top 10 pick at that time. And now he's legitimately considered a top five pick. So, you know, as for my own evaluation of those guys, I haven't really taken a deep in-depth look at those quarterbacks, so I will sort of abstain from further commentary. But one thing I will not abstain from is commenting on my love for the best tasting protein bar on the market. And of course, I'm talking about Built Bar. All Built Bars come with 100% real chocolate in them, so they taste just like a candy bar. Double chocolate, coconut, almond, peanut butter, mint brownie, caramel brownie tastes just like very popular candy bars. And that's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the mini flavors at Built Bar. And Built Bars are not just tasty, they're healthy too. They're low in sugar, low in calories, high in protein, high in fiber. I like using them as low-calorie meal replacement for breakfast and lunch. You can use them to give yourself an energy boost pre or post-workout, however you want. Just head over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON20 to get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host the Peacock and Williamson show on the Locked On Podcast Network every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt are giving you that national perspective. Get your picks, your previews, and much more every weekday on the Peacock and Williamson podcast. Subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. So AJ's next question, he asks, dumb question for the mailbag. I don't think it's a dumb question. He asks, in a trade for a player, can a team take on the dead money as well from the team that they are trading with, assuming they have the cap space? If not, is there something I'm missing as to why owners wouldn't want that if it's for a special player or missing piece to your championship run? So AJ, as well as everybody else listening to the podcast right now, I'm going to answer this question, but I'm going to assume that you've already listened to the Salary Cap 101 episode from February 17th that I did on the podcast. If not, then terms like base salary and prorated sign-in bonus and dead money and guarantees aren't going to be a little bit confusing for you. So I would highly recommend for anybody who needs to go back and listen to that February 17th episode, the Salary Cap 101 episode first, then come back, listen to this one, because I'm going to explain basically the difference between trading and cutting a guy when it comes to dead money. And so I'm going to assume that you understand those basics first, because we're going to use some of the terms. So this is, I guess, Salary Cap 102 or 103. So basically, to illustrate the difference, let's just assume, let's take a sample contract and say a player has 2 years left on his contract. This current year, the first year of the 2 years left, his base salary is $10 million, and the next following season is going to be $15 million. This year, however, half of his $10 million, so $5 million, is fully guaranteed. The player also has a prorated signing bonus of about $5 million per year. So that would give him a cap hit this year of $15 million and $20 million next year. Now, if the player is cut this offseason, the 2 years of the prorated bonus money, so the $5 million plus the $5 million in guaranteed, would accelerate to this year's cap as dead money. So meaning that the team would take, by cutting this player, they would take a dead money hit of $15 million, which would in fact only save them $0 because the player's cap hit was already $15 million to begin with. Now, the difference is if the player was traded, the dead money would only be $10 million. And basically, the team that trades him would have to only absorb the prorated bonus portion of dead money, and instead the base salary, so this guaranteed portion of his contract, would transfer to the acquiring team, the team that trades for him. So let's say that in this example, the Falcons traded this player to the Titans. The Falcons would essentially, by trading the player, would save about $5 million in cap space, and they would only take on about $10 million in dead money instead of paying him the full $15 million cap hit. So the Titans would then take on $10 million as part of their salary cap, and they would basically take on both of his base salaries, the $10 million this year and the $15 million next year. So again, if any of that's confusing, go back and listen to the February 17th episode on Salary Cap 101. You know, as far as I know, there's no loophole that allows teams to take on additional dead money, to take on bonus money. I think it has to do with sort of like guaranteed base salaries as opposed to bonus money in terms of dead money. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I think that's the case. So that's why you don't see teams doing. I mean, there's obviously many reasons for why teams don't trade players, but that's one of them. We have one last question from Terrence F. He asks, do you think there's any chance that the Falcons could make a move to get Richard Sherman or J.J. Watt? Seems like our defense could benefit from their abilities and leadership, but I'm assuming the cap may make big investments like this difficult. Yeah, I don't think the Falcons will be particularly interested in those two guys. I think if the Falcons are going to sign veteran players, it is going to be guys that are basically going to be playing for close to the veteran minimum. You know, they might make an exception for a guy like Jarrell Casey and sign him to like a 1 year, two or three million dollar deal, but I wouldn't expect them to go higher than that at this point in time. And guys like Sherman and Watt, you know, there was a tweet last week that say, you know, teams are offering Watt like 15, 16 million. I think Pro Football Focus, you know, gave Richard Sherman a projected contract value of like 14 million or something like that. So yeah, I just don't think the Falcons will be particularly interested in those, you know, obviously in a different circumstances, the Falcons would be interested in those players in general. But this offseason, given the tight cap space and the fact that I don't think the Falcons are going to be too thrilled with signing veterans, you know, for the sake of leadership. I think they will sign some veterans for the sake of leadership, but they're all going to be cheap, I think, in that regard. They're going to try to get guys for bargain basement deals. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to see too much interest in guys like Richard Sherman and J.J. Watt or any other sort of big name veteran players that can provide that leadership that you're talking about. And I don't think you're wrong, Terrence, for thinking that the Falcons could use certainly some more veteran leadership, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But I think, you know, the coaching staff is going to try to provide that leadership on their own and then bring in some veteran players that are very familiar with the DMP system and schemes and whatnot that will be able to help teach some of these younger players, you know, sort of the ins and outs of the scheme and whatnot. So that's what I'm expecting to see. So there you guys have it on today's mailbag episode. We got another great question from Rich J that I do want to devote an entire episode to. Basically, I'll give you the tease, the question. He says, how likely is Ryan's heir apparent to sit 2+ years, much like Rodgers behind Favre, only because I like Ryan so much and I want to see him get a Super Bowl ring before he's done, and also probably get there faster than a young buck rookie? That's an interesting question from Rich, and I do want to sort of explore that fully in an episode talking about sort of what are the odds that the Falcons, at least from a quarterback standpoint in terms of getting their quarterback play, will they get the quote-unquote Super Bowl caliber quarterback play from Matt Ryan at the end of his career versus a young quarterback at the beginning of his career? And I think that's an interesting conversation, and I do plan on talking about that on tomorrow's episode. So look forward to that, guys. Thank you, Rich, for sending this question. I skipped it. You sent it in 2 weeks ago. Sorry I missed it, but, you know, you are inspiring a full episode devoted to that, answering that question. So we'll get into that on tomorrow's episode. If you guys have any questions that you want to provide me on future mailbags, including inspiring entire episodes, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, on Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, just like Rich did. And we will keep this thing rolling. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. And until then.